Well, good evening. I'd like to just have you open your Bibles for a moment to Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3. Scriptures teach us, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And here in this story about Eglon versus Ehud, I would just point out to you a pattern that repeats itself over and over in the book of Judges. At verse 30, it says, "So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 40 years. I would just point out to you that so long as Israel's God was Jehovah and not an idol, they had peace. Which is to say, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, past and present. The psalmist also says, happy is the people whose God is the Lord. And I would ask tonight, is the Creator God your Lord? Is He your King? Now, I would like to just take a moment with you and give you some food for thought with regard to the day at hand and the Declaration of Independence. And I have several sources that I'd like to share with you. And then, following which, I trust that you will be sufficiently challenged to take up on a continuous basis this matter of prayer for your country and your church. I trust that you looked into the bulletin this morning and saw the insert. If you didn't look at that and didn't read it, you ought to. You ought to read that. The former Speaker of the House, Mr. Newt Gingrich, in the letter from the Human Events writes these words. He said, "On this Sunday, July 4th, we will once again celebrate our nation's founding, marking the day in 1776 that the Continental Congress formally adopted the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence was intended to be an official statement explaining why the 13 American colonies had declared their independence from Great Britain. In the years following its passage, however, this statement of principles about the rights of man grew to mean much more. America became the only country in history founded, as Leo Strauss explained, in explicit opposition to Machiavellian principles, by which he meant crass power politics. Instead, America was founded on a set of clearly expressed self-evident truths. Thomas Jefferson said the Declaration was intended to be an expression of the American mind. And indeed, no document since has so succinctly and so eloquently spelled out the spirit of America. Our country has evolved out of the timeless truths expressed in the Declaration of Independence to develop a distinct character and set of values that distinguishes us from even other Western democracies. This holiday, it is worth taking a look at how several key phrases from the Declaration of Independence have served as definitional statements about the aspirations of America and how those words of our founding fathers have affected America in the 234 years since they were written." It was interesting that, to me at least, my wife and I sat last evening and we watched on the History Channel a series of viewings on the American Revolution. And there were some pretty eye-opening facts that were presented and so forth, but I commented her today that when I look back on that, they managed to do in about 7 or 8 segments on the American Revolution a total and complete secularization of the whole account of the American Revolution. I don't recall, maybe there was, but I don't recall one instance where God's name was even mentioned, much less the overwhelming influence that he had on our founders. Not one. So I would like to take these few moments and read to you, in part, the letter that was sent to Parliament and to the King by the Congress in July 4, 1776. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. And I would remind you that in the course of the Declaration itself, there are about 27 different instances, citations, where the colonists placed as complaints or proof of the need to make the separation before the King and for Parliament. Said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under the absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such a government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states." Later on in this declaration, it is stated this: "A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people." And then at the conclusion of this declaration, they write these words: "We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." These were signed by these people: John Hancock, Josiah Bartlett, William Whipple, Matthew Thornton, Samuel Adams, John Adams, Robert Treat Paine, Elbridge Gerry, Stephen Hopkins, William Ellery, Roger Sherman, Samuel Huntington, William Williams, Oliver Wolcott, William Floyd, Philip Livingstone, Francis Lewis, Lewis Morris, Richard Stockton, John Witherspoon, Francis Hopkinson, John Hart, Abraham Clark, Robert Morris, Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Franklin, John Morton, George Clymer, James Smith, George Taylor, James Wilson, George Ross, Caesar Rodney, George Reed, Thomas McCain, Samuel Chase, William Paca, Thomas Stone, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, George Wythe, Richard Henry Lee, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Harrison, Thomas Nelson Jr., Francis Lightfoot Lee, Carter Braxton, William Hooper, Joseph Hughes, John Penn, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward Jr., Thomas Lynch Jr., Arthur Middleton, Button Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, and George Walton. I would point out to you, and for what reason I do not know, but out of all these signees, Charles Carroll of Carrollton was the only one who identified where he lived. Now, I conclude with this. The founders recognized, and by the way, this I take from the document from the Heritage Foundation that was printed on July the 2nd by Amanda Reitner. She said, the founders recognized that governments depend on imperfect men, and they worried about the threat of an all-powerful central government where the few dictate to the many. In 1787, as the Constitutional Convention completed its work to enshrine the principles of the Declaration into law, Ben Franklin famously said the Constitution established a republic if you can keep it. In an address before the Naples Committee for Heritage, Heritage Foundation scholar Matthew Spaulding recounted a story from the Revolution. This story bears your careful attention. It was a story of a man who fought in the Battle of Concord, and his name was Levi Preston. Many years later, Captain Levi Preston was asked by a young historian why he had fought in the American Revolution. Was it the Stamp Act, the Tea Act, perhaps the treatises of John Locke? But Captain Preston explained that he didn't use stamps, he didn't drink tea, and he never read Locke. Then why? The interviewer asked. It's very simple, Captain Preston responded. What we meant in going for those redcoats was this. We always had been free, and we meant to be always free. They didn't mean we should. Now the fight to remain free continues today. Today's regressives are enacting policies that expand government and limit our freedoms. Heritage President Ed Fulner explains that Americans face a new set of intolerable acts. Wall Street bailouts, stimulus packages, cap-and-trade legislation, and perhaps most harmful of all, Obamacare. And again, I direct your attention to the article inserted in your bulletin. But the founders warned us of this ongoing threat to liberty. Thomas Paine once warned that the greatest tyrannies are always perpetrated in the name of the noblest causes. This 4th of July, today, America's greatest defense is our commitment to the principles of our founding. We must take pride in our heritage and echo the words of Captain Preston. We have always been free, and we always intend to be free. And we must do so with the same conviction, tenacity, and foresightedness as those individuals who, on that glorious day in July of 1776, brought to life the United States of America. I leave that for you to think about and remind you this. The Scriptures teach us that when, in the course of our living, we find ourselves in happy accord with God, we are happy and we are at peace. Read through the book of Judges and you come to the hilltop where there was peace and serenity, so long as Jehovah was worshipped and exalted. You will find the nation slipping back into the valley when all of God, Jehovah, the Deliverer, was exchanged for an idol. Then back on the top again. So is the same today. Now, not only is our nation in grave and urgent danger of slipping into a valley from which it may never in your lifetime and mine recover. But I will also remind you that the churches that dot the land of America are in need of revival in every little village, in every large city, that the people of God need to once again declare themselves to be out and out for the Lord. No soldier can, by his own choice, pick and choose the fights he wishes to engage in. When a soldier enlists, when a soldier becomes subject to the commander-in-chief, he at all times, for the length of his tour, follows the orders that are given. He is not at any time given the option of picking and choosing when he will rise and when he will sleep, when he will go forward or when he will retreat, what battle he will pick to fight in and what battle he will choose to refrain from. The people of God need to be out and out for God. Every Sunday, there should be no dispute where loyalties lie in the army of Christ. Should be no dispute. Every day of the week, Monday through Saturday, there should never be any doubt about the testimony of your life, whose soldier you are. 7 days a week, all the days of the year, we must steadfastly declare ourselves to be for Him who loved us and gave Himself for us. And so, if the United States of America will yet be free until Jesus comes, I believe that it is greatly enhanced, that possibility, as God's people take to their knees and in all humility, beseech our God for deliverance. We were at a reunion yesterday, and one of the older fellows engaged me in conversation, and he was bemoaning the deplorable state of the churches as he saw it, and he said, what can we possibly do to change that? And I said, absolutely nothing. Just keep plodding along. Do what's right. Be faithful to the Lord. Don't stop, even if it means you're the last one plodding on. Continue to plod on. And he went away and he sat down. And he came back a little while later and he asked me all again. He said, I'm not satisfied with that answer. He said, there seems to be to me something more that we could do. He said, doesn't the Scripture say if my people are called by name, my name shall humble themselves and pray that God will heal our lands? He says, doesn't that apply to us? And I said, no, it does not. That is a promise to national Israel. Now, I don't deny that if all of a sudden, all across America, God's people would make much of prayer together corporately and individually in the privacy of their homes, I don't doubt for a moment. But what God may yet, in His own wise providential dealing with His country, spare us from what other Christians in Europe and in Asia and Africa already experience before Jesus has come. Don't think that because we are Americans that we are exempt from suffering, extremely so, before the trumpet sounds. And so I would call upon you tonight to take with a great degree of seriousness a responsibility to pray.